Okay, are we ready?
Yes.
Nice.
Okay, so our guest today is Daniel Sharpstabber Kim. And he is with us today. And why is he with us today?
Yeah, well, okay, so I thought it would be a great opportunity for our church to get to know Daniel. He is one of our newest staff members.
Yeah.
But, okay, so the thing I was really curious about and the thing that I've been kind of mulling over is this idea of quiet quitting. But, yes, so it was this idea that I was mulling over was, like, how do you have resilience to keep going? How do you stay tender? How do you stay the course that God has placed on your life? And the reason why I wanted to bring you on was, like, A, to have people hear your story, but also because you've lived this out in different seasons of your life. And I just thought it would be really great for people to hear your story. And you've done it in a way that, like, if you've had the chance to meet Daniel, you get the sense that he doesn't have, like, resentment or bitterness.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you've been in ministry for a long time, when you've experienced different things, it's really easy to become guarded or calloused. And so when you meet people who...
Cynical.
Yeah. So when you meet people who have remained tender and remained hopeful, I think it always... I'm always curious about that, and I always want to hear more about how you've walked through. Because I'm sure it's not perfect.
Sure.
It's always a fight to stay in it.
Definitely.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think you are the right guest for it. But I do like how you, Heidi, you started off by, you know, really mulling over the idea of why the quiet quitting phenomenon is so rampant in the church.
Yeah.
When really the Christian should be known for resilience.
In general.
In general, and faithfulness in general, in life.
Yeah.
But we too are, you know, we're part of this culture, we're part of this world, and often we get swept up in the even the spiritual phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Of what's happening in our culture, right?
We're
not immune to it. We do have to fight it off intentionally, but often we get caught up in it. And so,
can you actually explain what quiet quitting is, really quickly?
Because quiet quitting is basically like you're resigning, but resigning in your heart, and you're resigning in your efforts.
Mm.
So, for instance, you only do the bare minimum at work.
Mm.
You've given up in trying to succeed or be excellent or go above and beyond.
Mm.
You've basically resigned in your heart that management won't change or this project won't change because of me, or you're bitter or you're bothered. And so deep inside, it's almost like a passive-aggressive move by the employee. And they go, well, since I can't make change, I'll change my heart towards negative or numbness.
Yeah.
And then they go, so whereas, like, when you first got hired, you're like, oh, you need me to stay afterwards and work on that project with you? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not talking about imbalanced lifestyle, right?
Yeah,
like where all you do is work. But there was this eagerness and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
But then in time, you're like, hey, I don't think my manager cares about me.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't think this company cares about me. And all of a sudden, there's this bare minimum kind of lifestyle. And actually, business experts, management experts call it the citizen. Is it the citizen? The citizen effect.
The citizen effect?
Uh-huh. You're like a citizen in a culture that only does the bare minimum, right? You're not a leader. You're not a champion. You're not, you know, you're just kind of like, just existing.
Yeah.
My son has this, what is that thing? Have you ever heard when you're playing games and you're in this like world, in their 3D world, and there's all these characters that are just there and they're just living?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What is it called?
NPCs.
NPCs. And what does that stand for?
Like non-person, I forget.
It basically means like you're like a non-consequential, non-important person, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what citizenship wow. employment is. It's like
yeah.
you kind of become this person that's just around.
Just there.
Yeah, yeah. And you're wait. You don't want to. You know, retire, or you don't want to quit.
Yeah.
Because you need the money.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to give your heart.
Totally. And you know, I think as you were talking, I was thinking about how quiet quitting can also refer to like relationships, mm-hmm. to friendships, to church membership, to our life. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's kind of the phenomenon. I mean, you brought it up in a sermon a few weeks back, in the Broken Cisterns series. Yeah. But yeah, I've been kind of mulling over that for a while because it's, you kind of hear it everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like not necessarily like the term quiet quitting, but you hear it in like conversations with friends mm-hmm. in their workplaces or even when they talk about their relationships. Yeah, it's like this yes, resignation.
I feel
in
like
heart.
Daniel, like, we're going to let Daniel speak soon.
Eventually.
You guys are like, where is this sharp man? But I think if you can tell us maybe just your journey, like, I think people need to know how long of a ministry journey you've had. And when and by the way, guys, we are affording you the benefit of the doubt that you're able to translate his long ministry journey to your journey with God, whether you are in full-time ministry or not.
Yeah.
And so I hope you catch just the nuances and the turns that he had to make along the way that kept him tender before God, you know? But
sure.
Can you share a little bit from like, even like college years onto that early years that
sure,
at,
yeah.
Living Hope and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I went to college, UC Davis. Mm-hmm. In 2005, and I got called to ministry there after my sophomore year in the summer. And so, mm-hmm. You know, I was called, but I didn't really know what that looked like, mm-hmm. you know. And so I served in college ministry until I graduated in 2009, and then mm-hmm. I stuck around for two more years to be one of the leaders in our college ministry.
Oh, you stuck around the college to help out? Yeah,
to help out. So I stuck around. I wasn't like formally, you know, in ministry or anything like that, but mm-hmm, I just mm-hmm. felt called to be there.
Sure.
And so, I was called to be there. And so I was there for two more years. And then after 2 years, I actually got introduced to the pastors of the previous church I was at, mm-hmm. Pastor Benjamin and Sonny. And I went on missions with them to Africa and Ethiopia. Yeah. And that totally just blasted my world. And so that, I mean, yeah, like I grew up pretty conservative and going mm-hmm. to college, I started experiencing being more open to the gifts of the Spirit. And then you go to Africa.
And that Africa trip, you mentioned like there's miracles.
Yeah, it was like Acts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the book of Acts. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, like I felt like this whole part of Christianity that was there, but I just never knew was there, was like mm-hmm. open to me. You know, and so I was like, wow.
So is it fair to say, like, even though your Christian journey in general wasn't, like, it didn't start with this exciting boom effect, mm-hmm. is it fair to say your ministry journey started off that way?
I think
your
so,
ministry
yeah.
journey mm-hmm. was pretty intense, yeah. like, pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if you want to talk about the honeymoon stage, that was a pretty amazing honeymoon yeah. stage of your ministry.
No, yeah. for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I felt like God became more, not real, but way more interactive at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And before, you know, you pray and you worship and do those things and, you know, you try to hear from the Lord. But there's something about when you pray and you see miracles and you see mm-hmm. like an interactive God.
Yeah.
It just kind of changes the mm-hmm. way you look at life, you look at ministry and things like that. So I got that experience, which was really cool. And then I came back. And I transitioned out of my time at UC Davis, my ministry there. And I moved back to the Bay Area. And that was when Pastor Benjamin Sonny invited me to come join their internship that they were doing there at their church. And so that's when I joined their internship as an intern pastor. And so, so that was 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was there till 2022.
Now you had this amazing start at the university, probably mm-hmm. loving the vibe, loving the camaraderie, serving the young people. I guess you're young yourself. You know, mm-hmm. you just graduated, but you're kind of, you're still in that mix, that, that excitement, curiosity of young college students. And then you go off to Africa where like you not only hear God calling you, but then you see God meeting you. And answering your prayers, and the next thing you know, you say yes to an actual like more formal internship, like an engagement into. So it's like I almost imagine you're like taking steps into this door. And so now you're in. Tell us about that. Like, so was it always that like powerful every day? Was it always like this high? Like, what did you go through?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the ministry at that church that I was at, it was really shaped by kind of the way Pastor Benjamin Sunny, the pastors at the time, they're very passionate. And I think their whole perspective is that we want to reach for more of God. It's constantly like we want to reach for more. Let's not be satisfied with, you know, what we've experienced. But we really believe that God desires for heaven to come on earth, you know? And so, you know, if heaven is supposed to come down and we're able to live in the reality of heaven, then we shouldn't be satisfied with like the reality that we're living now, you know? And so obviously it's not like every day or crazy miracles or
Living, their ministry seems to be like embodiment of the first half of that Lord's Prayer, right? Let your let it be on earth as it is in heaven. It's such a heaven on earth vision. Which, I mean, we can testify, like when they came. I think our church will never be the same since our last prayer night, prayer and worship night, Kavanah. We call it Kavanah night. But they, and I'm not saying like it's them, but God uses people with like it's almost like each minister has like a niche, like a thing that God likes to do through them. And he, I mean, talk about heaven on earth. Our church like, will never be the same after that day.
They were like the AED machine, like the AED machine. You know, like that? It's like when you're flatlining, they're like,
Heidi's husband is a doctor, and most of us do not relate.
Back to your story, you kind of landed on, you know, you were there for what, 11-12 years in ministry. Was there ever a time, because I think the start of a story is always like, especially Pastor Benjamin and Sunny, they're the, I would follow them honestly, like off a cliff. I know that's a really, I would follow them to Africa. They have that. But like, was there ever a time when you, you kind of like, there's a moment where you're launched into that. And then, you know, I think for the first several years, you're probably gliding, you know. But then there's a moment where you kind of hit a point where you're like, okay, I need to start, you know, finding my own engine. What was that like for you?
Well, first I'll say this. Obviously, I shared about the whole heaven on earth thing, but I think one of the most powerful things about their ministry is that they really want family. Like, they want to work with family. And so I know a lot of churches, you know, you come and you, you hire people to be on your team and there's partnership and that's really cool. But the thing that actually drew me to them was they, you know, they, one of the first things they said to me, even before they really knew me, was like, you know, we feel like you're like a son to us. And not in like a disparaging kind of way, but just like the type of relationship. And so they wanted to cultivate this relationship where it's not just us partnering in the gospel, but there's something where they want to
pour into. Not a hired hand.
They
don't want to just use you.
And that's important because I think when I share about that journey that I had, the wilderness season or whatever season that I had, the thing that kept me connected was that there's something more than this is my job. You know? And there was a little bit of tension at times because of that layer of relationship that we had, but there's something different when you're, when you know your family, than if you're just here because we're trying to get something done, you know? So I just wanted to say that, But yeah, I mean, for sure, the first couple of years, you know, you're excited. Mm. I'm young. I'm like,
there's a high.
I'm an early 20s for sure. And you know, you're with people who are so charismatic, and you look up to them so much. But you know, the thing is that eventually, if you're around someone long enough, you know, you see their humanity, you see their flaws, you see, and you know, they'll be the first to tell you that they're not perfect. You know, but something happens when you look up to someone so much, and then you start to see their humanity. It's almost like, not like your dreams are shattered, but you just start to realize, oh, maybe it's not, everything is not as I thought it was.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, because I think that is part of the key to resilience, is to handle that revelation well.
Yeah, wow.
And what I mean by that is like, because some of you guys are listening going like, I definitely don't see my boss as my family. I don't see, you know, my pastor as like a father to me, or my management at work as a father or mother to me. Like, so there's like, there could be the sense of like disconnect where they're like, well, he's definitely called to traditional ministry or whatnot. But the principle's the same. And what contributes to quiet quitting is our inability to translate people's humanity. As in, like, when we start seeing our leaders and our bosses and our workplaces and our ministries and churches, when they, when their humanity seeps through their gifts, when you're growing, you're let down by it. But when you're maturing, you meet them at it. It's a big difference. When you're maturing, when you're growing and you're still mature, you look at it from afar. And you go, how human are they? Almost like a letdown.
It's like disappointment.
As you're growing, you're like, thank God they're so human. Like me. And so under having that transition in perspective, when, because every leader in every company or church or whoever that you're under or that you're excited about, eventually their humanity will leak out. It's just a fact.
You know, you use the word like shattered. I think that really, I mean, there's that, it's between resilience versus fragility. And I think everyone gets to that point. Like you said, when you are met with the humanity of someone that you either admire or you think maybe was going to be the rescue or, you know, the one who was going to change it all. There's like that point in your growth or your journey where it doesn't meet your expectations. And that disappointment can be so damaging. And I think it's like at that moment where I feel like people either say, okay, well, I'm just not going to trust anyone, or I'm just going to like guard myself. Or like you said, when you, when you're met with like the humanity leaking through, you become jaded and cynical. Like, okay, if that person who I looked up to is also human, then like, who do I trust?
So what, so, you know, like, by the way, we know that, that whatever you share, it's like, these people are amazing. So it's not like,
it's just humanity.
But we just want to know, like, so what happened? Like, what happened to you? In those stages.
I mean, I think one thing that happens is when you first start, when I first started, they were like, they were on this pedestal and they were like so high, and I wanted to be like them. And once that happens, like the jadedness you're talking about in your heart, you almost start to believe that they're not against you, but they're like keeping you from something, or you're unable to get to where you're supposed to go, maybe. It's so funny because like when I first started, they were the ones that propelled me into where I was supposed to go. But at some point, it was, there was like this shift in my heart where I felt like they were maybe even like holding me back, or I couldn't maybe be where I was supposed to be because of them, or because of maybe their shortcomings, or you know what I mean? And so it's like so interesting because like you were saying, you see them as a person, and like you go from focusing on all of their gifts and things like that, and you start to focus on their shortcomings, and that starts to become like super highlighted. And so for me, when I'm like really healthy, mm-hmm. I'm like such a good support. Mm. You know, I'm like down to do anything and everything. Mm. But then when I become unhealthy, I become, like I said, I'm super critical.
Mm, you're sharp.
I like wear my emotions on my sleeves.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just not a positive presence.
Okay.
You know, and I think that's kind of what it started to do. And you know, looking back, I know they were really trying to challenge me to grow in my leadership and to grow as a person. But it was really hard for me to see that. Like, I think one of the first things that I look back and I notice is that I just didn't have hope. Like, I lost hope for the future or like where I was supposed to go.
Yeah.
Right. And so I just don't see that. Mm. And so all I can see is just where I'm at in the moment. Mm. And I'm just wondering, like, where is this going? Or what am I doing?
Wow.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was stuck in that season for a long time. I mean, I was serving, I was still faithful. You know, talk about quiet quitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not so much of an external thing, but internally I was wrestling with this idea of like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Mm. You know? And even to a point where I was like, am I even called to be in ministry? Mm. Like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? You start to compare yourself.
Totally.
You know, one of my best friends, he was doing it at the same time as me. We were kind of on the same track, you know, and it felt like he was just like thriving in his call, you know, and like, I love the guy, you know, and we're still really close, but like, I just couldn't help but compare my track with his track, you know,
totally.
And we're like on such different tracks now. I'm just like, it's just silly for me to even try to think that I was comparing myself to him, but yeah, at the time, when you don't have hope, all you can do is try to, you know, look at your situation and just try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah,
you know.
If I can just tag team there, it's interesting because when I did the message on quiet quitting, I talked exactly about that. I talked about how quiet quitting is the result of hopelessness. And the hopelessness is either externally, like the hope we had placed on these people or these companies or these churches. And then we realize that they may not pull through. But what we fail to see sometimes is that not only, you know, do people let us down, and organizations let us down, and then we can experience hopelessness in that way, or letdowns, and then be tempted to be in quiet resignation. But we also don't seem to be, at least in the early stages, we're not aware of the fact that our placement of hope in these people is actually a mistake of our own.
Right.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? And I remember early in ministry for me, when I was like 19 or so, this pastor, I'll never forget it, this old pastor who knew about the fact that I was recruited by this up-and-coming ministry. And he had heard that I'm going to be mentored by this amazing minister who was like just rock star minister in terms of his leadership style and everything. So that mentor of mine brings me to this pastor to meet with him, to just hang out. And I'm just hanging out, talking to him. And I'll never forget it, Pastor Enns gets on his knees and he looks direct me in my eyes and says, if you're going to last, you need to see past the burning bush. And I was like, what? You know, I was like 19 or something. I'm like, what's the burning? You're talking about Moses? Like, I was so confused. And then he goes,
please
like,
explain.
Yeah, and he kept saying, if you're gonna last, if you're gonna make it through this journey, you need to look beyond the burning tree. And what he meant was that initially we're drawn by that burning tree.
Yeah.
But the burning bush. But like Moses, we have to see through that initial attraction and gaze upon the Lord beyond, behind that attractive or miraculous or, you know, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And it's behind that burning bush where the Lord resides. That's where you get your resilience.
Hmm.
And he was trying to tell me, the mentor you just got is the burning bush.
Hmm.
And if you fixate on him, it will eventually burn out.
Yeah.
You will eventually burn out.
Yeah.
Meaning we're not called to burning bushes. We're called to the God behind the burning bush.
Yeah.
That's good.
And so he kept saying, like, just remember, you know, he is a conduit. He is a gift from God.
Yeah.
But if you're going to last, you're going to have to gaze upon the Lord.
Yeah.
Behind him. Mm-hmm. Look past him. And part of that means look past his mistakes.
Mm.
Look past the fact that the burning is not him.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting? Like, the bush was burning, but it wasn't burned.
Yeah.
And so the miracle is that there was a fire, but it wasn't being burned. But also, it may be conveying that the bush itself is not the fire of God.
Mm.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It rests on the bush.
Yeah.
And I had to come to realization that these men and women of God are just like me, and they're to be honored.
Yeah.
They're to be loved, and they're to be studied and be mentored by.
Yeah.
But they are not the fire.
Right.
Yeah.
They are the carriers of the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I must seek the God of the fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
otherwise I'm stuck at everything they do.
Right.
And I just give up on the fire entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do things right, I think they're the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Perfectly in line with kind of where my story goes. I was in a dark season for a long time, but I think the changing point or the turning point for me kind of is like what you were sharing about. So I was serving in a role, and there was a church that we used to partner with pretty closely. We considered them like a sister's church, but I remember they were looking for a youth pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I was raising support, and so, you know, the church was, they weren't paying me or anything like that, but they had asked for permission to ask me if they could, like, if I'd like to come on staff with them, this other church. And so, you know, our pastors were like totally willing. They're like, they obviously wanted me to stay, but they wanted me to have the opportunity to, you know, say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was almost like an escape. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I want to do. I want to go into ministry. I want to have more agency. I want to do more, right?
Which is the greatest temptation for those that are quietly resigning.
Exactly.
Is an opportunity.
Is an opportunity.
Yeah. Right? Like, what?
Yeah. And I mean, this was a great church. You know, they had the resources. They had the people. It just seemed, compared to my situation now, like just greener pastures, obviously, right? And so, you know, my pastors, they sat me down, they talked to me about it. They're like, hey, we want to release you to do whatever, you know, you feel like God wants you to do, but we want you to pray and ask the Lord what he's doing, you know? And so I was just, in my heart, I was like, okay, this is a great opportunity. I'm like, it just, everything, it checks everything for me.
Yeah.
And so I was already like in my heart leaning towards that, but I was like, all right, I'll pray. You know, I got to do my diligence, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I prayed. And I remember I prayed, and so quickly God spoke to me and he said, I've called you to build this house.
No, Lord.
You know? It's so funny because like that was obviously not what I was expecting to
hear. You're like, peace. I experienced peace.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like an open door from the Lord, right?
Yeah.
But when I prayed, God spoke to me and said, I've called you to build this house.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and he didn't say much more than that. But the thing that carried me into all the way through when I transitioned out of my last church was that word, actually. Because that was the thing that I knew beyond the shadow of a doubt, like, circumstances, everything different, it doesn't matter. Like, the thing that God has spoken, like the word of God, was that he's called me to build this house. So regardless of how I felt regardless of what I was going through, mm-hmm. like if God's called me to be here, mm-hmm. then this is the best place for me, wow. you know? And yeah. I think that was when it started to change for me. I, mm-hmm. obviously, like I was still in this season of trying to figure out what was going on.
And, yeah, yeah.
But the thing I think that anchored me from that point forward is that, all right, well, God's called me here. Mm. I don't have to look for anything else. I don't have to think about what's better. But maybe to Pastor Brian, your point about seeking the God behind the burning bush. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, my pastors were like that burning bush where mm-hmm. I was like, they're the ones that's going to, you know, take me to the place I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was kind of the moment when God spoke to me personally about where mm-hmm. I was supposed to be. It began to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
obviously, you know, it didn't change overnight. But when I think back,
they remain the same as in like they've always been who they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you began to change.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. And then tell us about like your heart and your disposition. Like what happened? How did it go from that? And then God spoke to you. And what changed there?
Yeah, I mean, looking back, I know that what they were doing was they were like training me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for yeah. people who've done sports or people who work out or whatever, when you get trained, like the training is never like what you're doing yeah. in reality.
Yeah.
It's so much harder because you gotta extrapolate that what you're doing here is going to translate into something different.
Yeah, and yeah.
It's preparing me, right? I just couldn't see past that. I just couldn't understand that, like what they were asking, the roles that I was doing was not like mm-hmm. where I was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what they're expecting me to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? But I think when it really changed, because I eventually got a role, like an official paid role. I started doing these other things. But I think when it really changed for me was, there was like a crisis period at our church where, you know, there was a lot of tough things happening. There was a faction of the church, I guess, who ended up leaving. Mm. But there was a lot of hurt involved there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of accusations towards our pastors. Mm. But, you know, like in the past, I had seen that before where, mm-hmm. you know, obviously there was hurt and stuff. But this is the first time where they let us into that place.
Mm.
And so, you know, like I talked initially about, I saw them, saw their humanity, and it was like seeing their weakness.
Mm-hmm.
It was like this time I saw their humanity, but I saw them like in their pain.
And you started having empathy for them.
Yeah. And my heart started to change because I was like, oh, like they're like me. Mm-hmm. Like they get hurt by people. They get hurt and disappointed by different things. You know, like I saw them on this pedestal where I was like, dude, they got it all together.
Totally, yeah.
But there was something about when my heart started to have empathy and I was able to walk with them in that place
mm-hmm.
where it's not like we were on the same place, but I felt like we were walking together.
Mm.
That's amazing because I'm on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
I relate to Pastor Benjamin and Sonny.
Mm.
And what's funny is I have seen guys under me do that transition where, maybe this is a different perspective, but like I can see the excitement in the beginning when like we're latching on together. But over the years, I too am tempted for quiet resignation. And what I mean by that is not the way an employee does it, but maybe even the way the employer does it, which is they're going to leave me anyways.
Yeah.
They're, I'm a stepping stone for something else. And that's the temptation of the leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to invest.
Yeah. And then over the years, I've seen people where the switch for me is like as they grow or they overcome certain barriers emotionally and mentally or even the perspective of me or leadership in general, I can feel their heart for me change. It goes from like maybe like I'm a fan of yours to I respect your ministry to oh, you are so broken or I'm not impressed by you anymore.
Yeah.
But then there are some that make it to where I feel their empathy.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm used to the first few, but in the last few years, I'm like getting ministered to, and it's not that like it's not that I've changed, because I'm still the same broken guy. But they've changed in the sense that they see me now beyond. Not like they, after seeing my humanity or even being disappointed by it, they then go into a place where they're like empathizing, but they're also partnering. I can feel this partnering. And that's such a gift. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like as you guys were talking, you know, because we started this talk about like quiet quitting.
That's what we're talking
about. It's almost like, so I feel like we're kind of going through like the journey of like what it means to mature.
We're just sharing our traumas.
I think like there's a point where it's almost like you have to be humble enough to see these people or these organizations or these situations that we've placed on pedestals. Cause we all do that, right? I feel like we live in an era where like the celebrity, effect is so real, and we love to put people on pedestals. And I that could be a totally different podcast episode too, but there's this moment where you have to be humble enough to recognize like, okay, I might be disappointed by this person's humanity, but then there's that moment where you're like, oh, but we're both human and we're both journeying through that. And like, how do I wrestle with this disappointment and this hurt, which could be very valid, you know? And there could be really like damaging experiences. But it is that moment. Cause I think we can operate in the sense of like, well, I would never do that. Or like, I would not do it that way.
You mean about our leaders?
There's like almost like this pride, or this like haughtiness of like, like, well, if I was in that position, I wouldn't do that. But then there's this moment where you have to be real and realize, like, actually, if you were in that position, you'd probably do that or do it worse. Because we love to be, like, you know, all the scandals that are going on. Like, there's always a new one, like a, you know, public shaming kind of thing. Sometimes I look at those moments and I'm like, if I was in that position, I don't know if I would, like... If I'm being honest with myself, like, how would you react under pressure, you know? So it's like the same, similar thing of like being honest with yourself and seeing like, oh, they're in a position, of authority, and maybe they should know better, or, you know, like there's a different standard maybe, but it is like, you still have to see the human behind it.
I think... Obviously, there is a need for accountability
and
consequence. Because there are some folks that I look at and I go, I don't think they realize what they did. Like, it's pretty bad. But then there's others that get way more than I think what their crime was for, right? So it's all like debatable. I think the point that maybe we're trying to make is that we're not excusing leaders. We're not saying, like, if your church was truly abusive, then it's like, no, that's abusive. Like, you should get the heck out of there. I think what the disappointment is, or the letdown that leads to quiet quitting, my suspicion is that that we're kind of grieving over the fact that here is this leader, this authority figure, or my boss or pastor or church, and the hope is that with this person I can experience the love or the care or the wisdom or the skills of God, as in like they're not going to let me down, as in they're going to help me restore my vision of God. You get what I'm saying? It's not that we worship these people. We're just so let down by other times that we're like, maybe this one won't let us down. But it's kind of like dating. You know, when I talk to like people that are dating, and they're always talking about how the boy or the girl let them down again, another one, another one, another one. aside from maybe abusive relationships, I kind of go like, yeah, they're probably messed up, but they were just as messed up when you first met.
Yeah.
Mm. Right?
Yeah.
What you may be invited to and you left before you entered that invitation or accepted that invitation was you might have been invited to real love.
Hmm.
Right? Because it is in seeing and experiencing the dullness and the stupidity of that person or the or what some call the madness of the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's at that moment you both become human.
Yeah.
And you both can love. And yeah. Another way of saying love is long suffering. You mm-hmm. both can endure.
Yeah.
And I feel that way even with church, how we view church and how we view work and bosses to whoever, is that the minute we see something we don't like, we're like, oh, that I'm is out. Our ticket to leave.
Yeah.
As if endurance exists without suffering.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And suffering exists because of mistakes and gaps and, yeah. and leaks. So
yeah.
I feel like Christians are, especially in our time and in our setting, the word I keep getting is we're so fragile.
Yeah.
Mm. Like the littlest things derail us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, why did you break up? Oh, because he said this on. That's why you broke up. like, yeah, but he keeps doing that. Well, it's not abusive. It's nothing bad. It's not even toxic.
Mm.
It's just fights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's almost like we want a reality without pain.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a big part of that too is we don't want to take responsibility for
yeah.
what we do, right? A lot of times we want to shift the blame to you know, our boss or the company or whatever situation we're in, and that's kind of our way out, right?
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I've learned is that I can't control what happens outside of me,
mm-hmm.
but I can control what happens in me
mm-hmm.
and what I do,
mm-hmm.
right? And I have to take responsibility for the fact that I'm responsible for how I react or mm-hmm. how I respond, all of those things, and I can't shift the blame. And I think that's where you mature is when you say that, you know, the situation is not ideal, but I can still be this.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and I think that a lot of people aren't willing to do that because yeah. then you have to be responsible, right?
Yeah.
That's a good word.
Totally.
It's not only, so maybe back to your quiet quitting thing, is like, if you want to make it, you not only have to be willing to suffer, endure, and offer love.
Yeah.
But you also have to be mature and humble enough to take responsibility over yeah. yourself
yeah.
and your own calling
yeah.
in life.
That's huge. I
yeah.
think you really touched on something.
Yeah.
'Cause even what you said that God spoke to you about what he called you to do,
mm-hmm.
I think there's like a shift there mm-hmm. of like, in ownership, you know?
Yeah. You know, can I just chime in? Can yeah. I just brag about him real quick?
Because
yeah. I remember when we were like wrestling through all this about like, should we hire him now or not? You know, like, and I remember Heidi, you were so against hiring
him.
Oh
my
like,
God.
You know, you were just so like, you were just so like, anyone from Northern California is a boohoo.
I know
right?
it.
Okay. So okay. anyway, I'm just kidding. I just gave you an example of
rolling
divisiveness.
My eyes so
anyways,
hard.
So, but I remember when we were just talking and I wasn't like offering any jobs or, you know, it was really hard for me not to hint it. But as we were talking, he said,
was it obvious? Said, I feel like
it's probably obvious. It's probably very obvious. So you said something that really stuck out. You said something like, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said like, you know that I'm here whether I ever get to do this full time or not.
Mm.
Like whether I get offered a job at Echo or, you know, or not,
mm-hmm.
even though I feel very, very strong about the fact that I heard God calling me into full-time ministry,
mm-hmm.
he didn't put that on our church.
Mm.
He didn't say, therefore, if you're going to be the church I stay at,
yeah.
you best to be hiring me.
Yeah.
He said something like, whether Echo ever hires me or not, this church gets my heart and my service and my life, my offerings.
Yeah.
And then he says something. He said something like, because God told me to come here. Mm. So what it did for me was it liberated me.
Yeah.
Like expectation wise, as in like, I gotta make sure I'm always pleasing this member or this staff member. Mm. They're here out of their own response to God's voice.
Yeah.
And that is, I believe, what you need for resilience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there are days that he's gonna be disappointed at me, mm-hmm. or maybe discouraged, or like not as impressed, which will rarely happen. Okay, I just want you to know that. But it will happen.
Right.
But uh-huh. you have to think about it. Do I feel safe?
Yeah.
Right. Do people around you feel safe?
Yeah.
And I feel safe knowing that that my faults are not going to trigger him.
Mm.
Right? If anything, it may strengthen him to rise.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not going to trigger him. And that's covenant living, mm-hmm. where I know he's in covenant with God,
mm-hmm.
and I'm part of that story.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not dependent on me.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that's a healthier model of engaging in your calling. Do you feel called of God?
Yeah.
So like I love, you know, Pastor Sam, you know, from Hong mm-hmm. Kong.
Yeah.
He straight up asks people like when they're kind of like, and this we won't do this, but when they're kind of like disgruntled or whatever, he just straight up says like, "Hey, do you feel like you heard God when God placed you in this church?"
Mm.
And they're like, "Yeah, I heard God." And they go, "Okay, then we're gonna have to deal and work this out." And so, too bad. Like, meaning, if it doesn't,
I think we should adopt that model. Yes.
even if it doesn't get fixed tonight,
right? Yeah.
You're gonna be here, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
So he lives with this like non-anxious presence,
mm.
where he's kind of like, well, you said you heard from God.
Yeah.
But in America, in American churches, it's almost like a sales pitch. Like we'll make sure we do enough to keep you.
Right.
That shouldn't be like that. People that go in, if you go to a church, you should feel God has placed you there.
Yeah.
And your responsibilities to God. And that might be one of the most important keys to resilience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is do you have a responsibility to God's voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think you touched on even like the idea of like consumerism too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you don't have like that ownership that you feel like God has placed on you, whether it's like going to a church or a job or where you feel like God has truly called you to, like you have that conviction, you start to see other things like, well, what can you give me?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like, how am I showing up in this place?
Mm.
And so I think what I really love about your story is that, mm-hmm. you know, you talked about how God has called you to build the house, and you did that even when you weren't in full-time ministry,
mm.
like just by your guys' presence, mm-hmm. you and your family, in your job and as members of the church too. It was like, there was like a heart posture. And, you know, when you can tell when someone has that kind of mm-hmm. heart, there's like a sturdiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a peace that you experience when it's not like, oh, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. rather like, I feel called to this, and I'm living out the calling that God has placed on my life.
Maybe if I can ask him a question then, yeah. like, so there may be some folks, so like say, what was the year, like the first few years mm-hmm. you were here with us?
Yeah.
Was it like 2 years, 3 years ago?
2022.
Yeah. You had just left full-time ministry, mm-hmm. you got a job in Irvine, and now you're working, you know, in a non-church environment, right?
Yes.
And you're going to our church, you're getting plugged in. Imagine people at that moment, mm-hmm. okay? They're not in your shoes now.
Sure.
They're at that in-between stage.
Yeah.
What would you tell people that have experienced, say, the highs and the lows, yeah. they have a whole history with God, whether it's in church ministry or just following Christ in their own lives and yeah. work, but then they arrive at our church or they experience all that in our church.
Yeah.
And our listeners, either in our church or other places, they're at that juncture where they're like, I have this great history with God.
Yeah.
I've been through a lot of crap, mm-hmm. and I'm so tempted to check out.
Yeah.
And just attend a church.
Sure.
Or just, like in our workplace, just work and not see work as worship. Mm-hmm. I'm tempted to resign in my heart.
Yeah.
What would you say, looking back at that, those 2 years or whatever, because mm-hmm. you did not know you would be back in full-time ministry here. There was no guarantee.
Absolutely not, no.
So what kept you buoyant? What kept you kept you tender before God?
Yeah, I mean,
and they're right here. What did they have to do? They're like, Daniel, what do I do? I don't want to be.
I mean,
so calloused.
I don't want to like just like act like it's so simple, because obviously every circumstance and situation is different. But yeah, my challenge to people would always be just like, what is God saying to you? Like, don't hear from someone else. Mm. Don't hear from other, because then you are putting responsibility on other people.
Mm. But, back to that responsibility.
Yeah, but I think for me, I so strongly believe, like, what is God saying to you? And I think a lot of times people don't really believe that God is going to speak to that specific request or that specific question. But, you know, there are certain seasons where it's time to go. And there are certain seasons where you got to, like, really, like, dig in.
Yeah.
And grind it out. You know, like, my last church, I thought I was going to bury my bones there.
Yeah.
You know, I was ready for that. Mm. But there was a time when God said, it's time for you to go. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't ready for that, you know? It's not always because I feel like it's time to go, you know? But my challenge, and he spoke to me in that season too, where it was time to go. Mm. He so clearly made it clear that he was telling me it's time. Mm. And so my challenge to people always—
But he told you.
He told me, yeah.
And there was probably affirmation with those that you were submitted to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But I had to hear from God first.
Right.
You know, and
you hear from God and the body affirms it.
Yes.
Or confirms it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I think some people are like, oh, maybe it's too much. Mm. Like, why do I need all that? It's not that complicated. But my thing always is, if God tells me something, and that's like the most confidence that I could have. Mm. So if God is telling me to be here, then I know without a shadow of a doubt that that's the best place for me, whether it's hard or challenging, you know, and you don't really understand why. I can say, God, you told me to be here, and I know that you are going to make it good.
I love it because we invited Daniel in a very precarious space. Like, we at Echo right now are going through some stuff, right? And we're not, like, a couple years ago, it would have been very, like, reasonable. But inviting you at this time, it's like, it's pretty risky for you.
Sure.
But you did not place that on us. Mm. You were like, no, I'm responding to God.
Yeah.
And I'm believing you guys heard God too.
Yeah.
And so I think that confidence is something that we all long for. Mm. And you guys all deserve it. Every one of you listening deserves to live with peace and confidence.
Yeah.
But it doesn't come from fixing your boss. It doesn't come from fixing your organization. Now, God may use you to help them. Mm-hmm. We're not saying God is not into order and excellence and all that. Mm-hmm. Like Joseph. Joseph made friggin' Pharaoh's, you know, evil empire better.
Mm. Right.
But God never released him.
Yeah.
From prison.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're not saying he doesn't want to make things better through you. You know what I mean? Mm. But you deserve to know that you're in the will of God. Mm. And to know that comes from prayer. But to your point, to actually pray and ask God for his word, mm-hmm. you have to be willing to stop being resentful to God.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is, a lot of times we don't grow because past experiences with church and leaders, instead of getting over it or forgiving or having self-awareness to know maybe it was your part too, instead of going through all that inner work, we just straight up say passive-aggressively, it's your fault, God. Mm. And one of the ways you know that, guys, is you do quietly resign. Mm. You no longer pray for his word.
Yeah.
You don't pray for direction, right? And you don't submit or give your heart to the things that God has placed in front of you. Excuse my language, but there's like a half-assness to you, right?
Yeah.
And people have to always like conjure you, like allure you to something, to do something.
Yeah.
There isn't a responsibility.
Yeah.
But I want to challenge those that are listening. Like, I think, Daniel, you had so many reasons or so many reasons you could have made up.
Sure.
Like whether it's real or fantasy, to stay quietly resentful.
Mm-hmm.
Or even cynical. And so the fact that you are re-engaging in this way just shows me that he never actually left God.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that's a word for many of us. Like, are you willing, before people have to change, before organizations have to meet your you know, standards, are you willing to pray and hear God? And if God says, don't just stay, but give your heart as if this is the best place you'll ever be at forever,
mm-hmm.
will you be able to do that?
Yeah. Mm.
And I heard the same. This is funny because your story sounds exactly like mine.
Mm.
Before I planted Echo, I remember God specifically saying to me when I was under this pastor, Pastor Mike Berry in Maryland, he was the most... he was the easiest pastor to criticize because he has so many issues in my mind,
yeah.
in my heart.
Yeah.
Like when you just said, like, Heidi, you're like, many times you're like, you look at leaders and you go, I want to do that or I would do that better. I did that every day.
Mm.
Every day I was under his ministry, I was like, that's not what I would do. Mm. That's what I would do. I would do that better. Like, I was so proud and critical.
Yeah.
And every day I was like, Lord, get me out of here.
Mm.
Right? And I remember one day very clearly the Lord saying, you cannot ask me that anymore.
Mm.
Right? As a matter of fact, if you're going to succeed in me, if you're going to do anything fruitful in me, I want you to fully submit to this pastor.
Mm.
Right? And I want you to serve this place as if you will bury your bones here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Right? And I'm like, but what about my dreams? What about the calling? Even this pastor said, I'm going to plant a church someday.
Mm.
Right? Da-da-da-da. What's all this about? Nope. That's the attitude you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
What's crazy is when I finally began to give that to God,
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to leave.
Mm.
Yeah. I was like, oh no, I love this place.
Yeah.
And then, or you're like, I don't want to start anything new. I want to build this. And I love what God is doing through him. And all of a sudden I got to see the anointing on this man.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's the funny thing is I had to hear God's voice and the voice was actually to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And when he finally said, you need to leave, I was like, no. I don't want to leave. And then, of course, God spoke to our pastors and our elders, and they all said, you need to leave. You need to go. But then that's also the confidence that Michelle and I had when we came to L.A. or Orange County, and I couldn't find the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm crying in parking lots because nobody wants to take my resume because for some reason, over the last 10 years that I was in Maryland, I mean, over the last 10 years that I was in ministry, the world went from paper resumes to electronic submissions or something. So I would show up at factories with my paper resume. And they're like, we don't do it like this. Go home. And I'd be like, nobody wants me. And I remember sitting there like always like having a pity party.
Yeah.
And the thing that made me rise up every morning was, no, but I heard God.
Mm.
I know God wants this church to be birthed.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I think that's, we all need that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that way we don't place this weird expectations on people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you are believing that God is telling you to do something, then the responsibility is on God,
mm-hmm.
right? To make a way mm-hmm. or to make it good,
mm.
you know? And I think people, when they go through, you know, quiet quitting or whatever, they're no longer believing that where God has placed you, that is bigger than God, mm-hmm. essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't believe that. I think for me, I always think about, does God waste? Like,
ugh.
Does God waste things? You know, and so if he calls us to a place of, even if it's we got to like remain and we have to like quote unquote suffer or we got to grind things out, like, do you believe that God is going to waste that?
Mm.
And if you're quietly quitting, then essentially what you're saying is, yeah, I believe that God is wasting this.
Mm. Or you're wasting it.
Or you're wasting
the time that God gave you to be building something in you.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at, like you said, the story of Joseph, it's like, God didn't waste a single thing that he went through.
Yeah.
It was always like a promoting season where when he goes through something and if he's able to.
But that's interesting because he could have quietly resigned.
Yeah, he had every right to.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so maybe if we were to be like churchy about this, maybe another word for quietly resigning is quietly rebelling.
Mm.
Is that you resist to do the work that needs to be done in those seasons of uncomfortable and unwanted environments.
Yeah.
You know, but it's really in that environment you grow.
Sure.
Totally.
Absolutely. Yeah. It builds character.
It builds character. Yeah.
I look back at the season that I was in and I could have totally left. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to, and you know, maybe in my heart, my mind, I would have felt justified to walk away. But I look at where I am now and I can honestly say that I'm here and I'm able to do what I do and have the perspective that I have because I had to sit in that season where I had to really wrestle. And I think some people like feel like wrestling is bad. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel like if I'm wrestling, then I must be in sin or I must not be right with God. But a lot of the times the wrestling is where God wants you to be so that you can come out on the other side being refined.
Yeah.
You know, like you need that.
Yeah. You know, like when you guys were talking, I remembered the season when my husband was called to, or he went to medical school in Pennsylvania, and it was like this podunk town in Erie, Pennsylvania. And I remember, you know, for the first several months I was there, I was so depressed and so, because I was in a place in my life where I was newly married, newly graduated. I was young. I was 23, 24, didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Went from having community and friends to like knowing nobody. And then my husband is in school all day and like, I'm just alone at the apartment. And I remember like, you know, at the time we were like, oh, we're only going to be here for a few years. So I had this thought of like, I don't want to make friends. I don't want to go to a different church. I'm just gonna like wither here and until God brings us back somewhere else.
Wow.
And like I distinctly remember feeling that way. Like, I don't want to make new friends. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to do anything. And then I forget if I was talking to one of the pastors back at Echo when I was visiting, and someone told me, Heidi, you have to place your roots where you're planted, and God has planted you there for a season.
Oh, that's good.
And no matter how long you're in that season, you don't know how long. Maybe you'll be there for the rest of your life. Maybe you'll only be there for a year, but regardless, like, God has called you to that place. He's placed you there. So you got to plant your roots. And I realized in that moment that I was so scared because to plant your roots, to put your heart into that place, it's risking rejection. It's risking, you know, using your energy. It's, but I distinctly remember, so I started to, I planted my roots there. And that's where I was like, I went to like a big mega church. I joined the worship team because I was like, I'm so scared of being on stage. I'm just going to practice
on the worship
here.
Wow.
I but I did it because I was like, God, I'm trusting that you are trying to do something in me here. And so I'm afraid of that. So where else can I practice that but here? I'm afraid of making new friends, of meeting new people, but I'm just going to
put my heart into it and I'm going to make new friends here. At the job I was at, I was a fraud analyst for e-commerce. So I was like, I'm going to be the best fraud analyst that I can be. I'm going to learn how to make chili during the winter time because like, where else am I going to practice this?
Yeah.
And you know, it turns out that we were only there for 2 years, but it felt like a lifetime. And I learned so much in that experience. And you know, it was shortly after that we moved back to California. And then a few years after, or I think a year after that, I was invited on staff. And that season was so meaningful to me because that's where I learned that resolve, that resilience of like, I'm going to trust that God has placed me in whatever season, whatever location, I'm going to give it my all because God is forming me.
Yeah.
And
so good.
Yeah. I think the reason why I wanted to share that story was like, I think there's, it's easy to look back, you know, I feel like it's easy for us, you know, we're in full-time ministry. We can, we have that kind of language of like, I know that God has called me here, but I'm thinking about the people who like, maybe they're transplants, maybe, you know, maybe they don't know what they want to do yet.
Yeah.
They're not sure, but I think it's like, I think when you shared that God doesn't waste things, I think that's such a powerful thing to remember because sometimes we don't want to give because it's like a waste of time. It's a waste of our energy. We're not going to be here that long or, you know, I don't want to like place my roots there, you know, but until God uproots you somewhere else, like when you're in a place, like, why don't you give it your all?
Yeah.
You know, like, what is God trying to form in you and form in the community with your presence too?
That's so cool. Cause you know, the image that I just got as you were talking is, when you're building furniture, now obviously I don't build furniture, I build IKEA furniture. But even with IKEA furniture, there's a lesson there, as in like, when you go through the pages, the instructions, like you're on page 2, for instance. I think if I was to correlate with what you're saying, we often save like those nails. And we go, I'm going to need these nails later. So we don't nail it. We don't use it.
Yeah.
But then later, we might use it all at a certain point in that furniture, but then it's it doesn't have the security. It's not strong.
Yeah.
You should have used it when it when the instructions said to use it. And I speak from experience. Actually, the other day, Daniel and I were building a shed, and we...
Lesson learned.
We have a we were like, oh, I think this goes here. I think this goes here. And then... And often it's either impatience or it's that issue of investment. Like, do I really want to expend my, my energy and heart and emotions into this space and time with the people that are here? And I think, like you said, all of life is used by God. So if that's true, those 2 years in Pennsylvania... For you, like you had those nails you had to use, and I believe that because you used it, it's now stronger, and you're stronger for today. So don't miss that opportunity, guys.
Yeah,
you might only be in page 2, and you're like, I need to save these. You don't save it.
Yeah,
give yourself to God in each season.
Yeah,
I think that's where I think people mistake what rest is. Rest is not the conserving of energy, right? Rest is finding rest in the intimacy with God.
Right.
And the rest that comes from the peace of knowing that you're in the will of God.
Yeah.
It's not just inactivity, right? It's this peace that comes from resolve and being response able to God's voice. There is a Sabbath there. There is a peace there. Right? I mean, even Jesus said, when the disciples were like, aren't you hungry? And he's like, I have food you don't know about. But he obviously didn't eat, right? Because they were like, aren't you hungry? What he's saying is something else is giving me sustenance. And I think that's what our people, or people in general need to hear is like, you don't need more rest. You need sustenance. You know what I mean? You don't need empty calories. You need good food. And that's where the rejuvenation and the resilience comes from.
Yeah.
is from that, not like, oh my God, I need another vacation. Or I need,
yeah.
We're constantly treating our resignation and burnout with the models of the world, which is escapism.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, I just got to go to Korea. I just got to go to Hawaii. I just got to, and I'm not saying that's bad.
Yeah,
I'm saying that's great for memories and, you know, that's great. But do not think that that will settle you.
Yeah.
That will bring peace to you.
Yeah, that's crazy. The image as you were talking is when you're talking about, you know, the furniture building. The image I got was like when we go through these seasons, we're planting seeds.
Mm.
And what we want is to reap like right away. Yeah. But what you'll find is that as you plant along the way, you get to eat the fruit of that later when it's grown.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, for Heidi, she was able to eat the fruit of her season where she was away, you know, when she got back, because it had finally matured, you know. And for a lot of us, we are going through the season right now, and we want to, but like what we realize later is that we're going to eat of that fruit after it's matured.
Yeah.
So maybe the invitation is plant good seeds.
Yeah, I mean, you got to plant, you got to keep planting.
And you got to wait.
Yeah. You can't reap until you've planted, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like the expectation is you want to reap, but you got to plant.
Yeah.
Well, whatever you did, you know, when I talked to Pastor Benjamin about bringing you on, it was so cool to hear another pastor just be so proud.
Yeah.
And so happy for our church to have you.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks volumes, right? That you guys had a great journey, and we are now really the ones benefiting from your resilience and your resolve, as well as Pastor Benjamin and Sonny's resilience and resolve.
Absolutely.
And the whole community. Like when we brought you on and we posted it, there were so many people that liked it and like commented, and they weren't from our church, which just tells me like there's good seeds and fruits.
Yeah.
The right things happen at the right time.
Yeah.
And now we're in a new season with this church, planting new seeds. Sure. And I really believe if we stay in this mode of being responsible to God's voice and finding true rest in his voice, we will be a church that is resilient and will be able to overcome this principality of quiet resignation.
Yeah. Maybe as we close, a question I can pose to you guys is like, so what's the argument against quiet quitting? Like, why should we not quiet quit, you know?
Hmm.
Like, 'cause I mean, we've kind of talked about it, like quiet quitting, like it essentially leads to burnout. You just don't know, like you become an NPC, like Joshy says, like you're sort of floating through life. Mm-hmm. And I think there is like a longing in us that wants more. I think like quiet quitting is sort of a cop out because, you know, we're disappointed or hurt or fragile or, you know, all these things. But like, and we've given kind of steps throughout, you know, our chat about like how to be resilient. You need to know your why. Like, why has God called you here? You need to know, I don't know, what else do we talk about? Like, that God doesn't waste things, that you can root yourself. And then you got to wait for the seeds that have been planted. But like, why do we not quite quit? I just wanted to kind of end with that kind of question for you guys. Like, what's the reward for you? Like,
Well, I feel like it's the fulfilled life that God has for you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the fulfilled life. I want to be able to thrive. And I feel like if I'm able to engage with God and understand why where I'm supposed to be is the place I'm supposed to be, and I could put in the work, then there is a fulfilling. There is an abundant life that God has for me. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm choosing to believe that what God says is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm choosing to believe that what God has for me is good.
Mm.
You know? Mm. And if I'm able to, I guess there's like the narrative that if I can quietly quit, then that's better for me.
Mm.
Or then I'm saving myself. Mm-hmm. I'm preserving myself. But, you know, in the economy of God, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? But there is a giving of myself that happens. And when I'm able to give, God offers me life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's only when I withhold myself that then I'm going to die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he explicitly says that. And so, you know, in the times when it is tough and I'm in the place that I'm supposed to be, if I'm able to like engage, mm-hmm. then the promise is that there will be life.
Yeah.
And there will be fruitfulness. And so I guess for me, that's the promise, mm-hmm. is that when it's tough, if I can engage and trust that God has an abundant life for me, then, you know, for me, then I know that on the other side, there is abundance, you know, even if it's tough.
Yeah, that's good.
That's so good. I just feel like for me, the opposite of quiet resignation is a life of worship. And, you know, scripture says, whatever you do, do it wholeheartedly as though you were working for the Lord. I think as scripture invites us to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, body, we do that by living wholeheartedly in everything we do.
That's good.
It's not just singing wholeheartedly at church.
Yeah.
It's engaging with our kids wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
It's being creative and contributing at work wholeheartedly as if unto the Lord. Mm-hmm. So if we can see past the bush, the burning bush, and see God in everything, then all of a sudden when we do it wholeheartedly or with intent, right? Then all of a sudden life becomes basically a platform for worship.
That's good.
And then you start worshiping. And then when you worship, there's intimacy.
Yeah.
Then when there's intimacy, there's fulfillment. Mm. And like Daniel was saying, you start living the life and life abundant.
Mm.
Again, I am not saying you're not going to have hard days.
Right.
And I'm not saying you're not going to even be like going through despair or even depression at times.
Yeah.
But when you live wholeheartedly, there's this undercurrent of gratitude, hope, and joy. Mm. And so... And that's my prayer, I think, for all of us.
Yeah.
Is that it's not just about resisting quiet quitting.
Mm-hmm.
It's about engaging in full worship.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. I think, you know, what I was thinking too, I was wondering, like, when are there times that I've quiet quit? I think sometimes it's the temptation to believe it doesn't matter. That I don't matter.
Yeah.
And I think to live in faith is to trust that God can use it and that God can use me. And so, like, you know, as we've been talking, I've been thinking about, like, who is that person on the other side? You know, like, who are the people who often quiet quit? It's often the people who think that it doesn't matter what they do. But it's like, it's almost forfeiting. It is forfeiting the abundant life and it's forfeiting the wholehearted life, but it's also forfeiting like the belief that like our life matters.
Yeah,
and it's forfeiting others from having a chance to be blessed by you.
Yeah. And so it's like this, it's this weird dance of like, it's like trusting and living in faith that God can use it. And even if he doesn't, that, like you said, in the economy of God, that he'll use it somehow, you know, he's not a wasteful God. So yeah, I hope that, do you guys have any last words? No?
No.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's all I got.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah, so thankful to them.